This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to part two of my conversation with Adam Geffner from Emphasis on the Authentic Persuasion Show. Adam, welcome to the after show.
Good to be here for round two, Jason.
So as always, in between part one and part two, we start talking about things. I'm getting excited. I share, you know, I take a lot of notes as a host because I think this is fun. I'm learning a lot. There's a lot of things, like even though I've been in the world of sales for quite some time, you know, I do a lot of writing, a lot of podcasts. I know my slice of the sales world and then things are different. I shared with you that this gatekeeper of knowledge is a new term to me. I've never heard that in that term, like specifically for that role. And you were sharing like, yeah, that's a term that you've heard forever. And it's interesting where industries, depending on what you do, companies, they might have these terms that seem common sense, but like it's not out there, which obviously is the value of shows and things like this.
Yeah, it's, I remember years ago, and I'll leave the company out of it, but about 20 years ago in my career, if anybody's now going to like Google and see what I've done 20 years ago, I was taking on a role where I was actually doing, you know, I was doing telecom work, but I went to take on remote access for my company as well. So director came to me and said, hey, I want you to, we're having some shifts and reorgs, and I want you to basically evolve our company's remote access solutions for the company. I went, okay, I need to learn remote access. And, you know, unlike the Matrix, I can't just plug in and go, I know remote access. So I'm trying to learn the knowledge, and I'm going to the people that knew everything on it. And it was really frustrating to try to get that information. And they're like, just read these books and this, that, the other. And I knew they had the information I needed. They were not willing to share because, again, they wanted to hold on to their role, hold on to their jobs, what made their, you know, made them irreplaceable. And it was extremely frustrating. So that is probably why I've been one of the reasons I've been such a proponent of good knowledge management, good single source of truth. Nothing's more frustrating when you're trying to figure out how to do something. And I don't care if you're technical, if you're in sales, if you're support, whatever you're trying to do, if you're trying to run a P&L. And you need information and somebody says, you have to dig around and spend hours to find the right person who knows that, to find they're out on vacation, they're out of office. Oh, I've transitioned out of that role. Yeah, I kind of remember something, but I haven't done that in a couple of years. You know, or they're telling you now you're trying to type down notes. It gets very frustrating. So doc from an effective and efficiency perspective, document it so that others can learn from it. Document it so that you can, recall if you need to and not have to remember what you did, you know, 2 years ago.
Well, and I know from a sales call center, sales environment, you know, in the office where everyone is there together, some of the value that comes up is just overhearing what people say in their conversations and then picking up nuggets, right? That's how I learned in sales in the beginning, was just like listening. Mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, that's a really good
tips
response.
And tricks.
Oh, that, yeah. And so, and then it's a matter of like, this just becomes this tribal knowledge. And then, but it's not documented. It's a new people have to just go through trial and error until they pick up that tribal knowledge versus that being documented, which is really tough. And then the world went virtual, remote, and now you don't have that eavesdropping tips and tricks, tribal knowledge, because now everyone's in their, you know, in their house or wherever they're at. And there isn't that element, right? Like how it's so difficult to then move that into, like you're saying, a single source of knowledge and information.
You know, I have to interrupt and actually say that is a really strong point that I don't think I've ever heard anybody mention. And I'm going to take the little tidbit, but that's so true that when we speak of all the pros and cons of working virtually as opposed to in the office, when you're in the office, you get to, like I said, you pick up that tribal knowledge, tips and tricks. You walk over, hey, I can't get the copy to work. Oh, you got to do this first. Or, do you know where such and such is? And just get those tips and tricks very quickly, pick it up. But when you're remote, if you're, you know, not in the office, where are you going to pick that up from? So that it actually enforces all the more reason to make sure that those tips, those tricks, those piece of information are out and about, well documented, well understood, and that people know where to find those pieces of information.
Yeah. And I truly think that if a company looks at their stats, both retention stats and then also selling effectiveness, closing rate, conversion stats, whatever you want to calculate there, and you look at that, it will indicate whether you have a good culture and good systems and processes and leadership collecting that information in a virtual remote? Or were you relying on everyone being in one place to be managed and trained on the fly? Do you actually have systems and processes or not? Right.
Yeah,
you can see it.
I agree 1,000%. You know, one of the worst things that can happen to a company from a sales perspective, whether they're contact center sale agents or inward sales or outbound sales, is where you start getting high attrition rates on either the customer side or the agent side or both. And it's horrible because it often leads to a very negative, very dark, vicious cycle that if your agents are if your customers are not happy, they start getting, they start leaving. Okay, the agents get under further pressure, the salespeople get under the further pressure, they're feeling frustrated, they start leaving. What happens if your agents or your salespeople start leaving? New people coming in, they're not as effective, not efficient, they don't know the process and the knowledge as well. That leads to more bad customer experiences. And you start getting this vicious domino effect where from a contact center perspective, your agents are leaving, your attrition rate is higher more quickly than you can bring new people in and train them even pseudo-effectively, which leads to higher hold times. It's just a horrible, horrible thing. And then from a sales perspective, again, you have these people coming that may be good salespeople, but don't know the product, the services inside and out because they don't have that seniority, they don't have that knowledge, they don't have those tricks that they've picked up over years. So absolutely, looking at the company's retention levels, look at the seniority. That is usually a good sign of good processes and a good sharing of knowledge versus the other, which ends up usually very bad.
Yeah. And that death spiral is hard to stop.
Yes.
Yeah, that one's a difficult one. So in part one, you answered my last very complex, two-sided, multi-pronged question, talking about salespeople working with subject matter experts and your kind of tips and ideas and processes and what to put in place. I love the fact that you said, for the salespeople to have questions and things that they need before they go to sales engineer, subject matter expert, whoever that is that's going to give them the support or help them customize or understand the best solution. But what is really happening out there most of the time is sales is just running around and then looking for opportunities, like you said, and then just setting them up. Where is that? Like, who in the organization should be building that? And is it, again, let me put it this way. A lot of times I see companies who are led by salespeople, not necessarily engineers. And if that's the case, then they will always be biased towards salespeople and think that salespeople can't do any wrong. And it's up to everyone else to kind of fix it or clean it up, right? If it's a technician run company, then they will side with the technology and then see salespeople as the difficulty. And then they'll go that side. Like, where do you see that balance in putting in those processes, getting everyone to play well together? And again, this goes back to your, anti-silo kind of focus of what we talked about as well, which we're both on the same page about.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good question, by the way. I don't have an answer. No, I'm kidding. So I'm going to equate it back. I'm going to give the analogy to something I work with on a daily basis, which is transformation for companies. All right, companies, it's very common in the context in our world to go from legacy on-prem solutions and want to go to the cloud and want to transform. And a lot of companies struggle with that. They have a problem with it. And part of that is because they do the way they always used to do. You know, the business says, I need a solution that do X, Y, Z. The IT team say, okay, we either have that in our repertoire, we're going to go and find it and then deliver it to you. And yeah, you may have upgraded them to new toys, maybe moved them to the cloud, but you haven't actually transformed the way work is done. All right. So equating that back to, or bring that back to your question though, all right, where you might have a organization that's predominantly sales run or predominantly technical run, the perspective and the focus is going to be very narrow in that area. I think in order to be successful in those scenarios, just like you need to be successful in a company trying to transform themselves, is you can't do the way you used to always do it. You have to bring your stakeholders, the client execs, together in the same room or virtually, whatever it may be, and actually have them have that conversation. So if you have a company that, let's say, is sales-oriented, and the technical side says, we want to bring you technology. We want to bring you solutions. We want to help empower, enable your salespeople. And we can do that if you give us a half a chance. Bring the sales leaders in there and from a technical, explain, here's how we give them new tools. Here's how we're going to make their lives a little bit easier, make them more efficient, more effective, et cetera. And if that resonates through and you can have that convincing conversation, those leaders can go, I get it. This makes sense. Okay. I want to instill that now top down. Likewise, if you have someone that maybe a company that's maybe, you know, we have a lot of SaaS companies out there that, you know, are DevOps oriented, everything's, you know, build your own code. There's nothing wrong with that for certain clients, but sometimes there's challenges from a human support factor. You need to bring stakeholders and actually increase their perspective. Okay. Give them more of that 360 degree focus and go, what you're doing may be technically effective and efficient, but there's other human challenges that you're not considering. They're beyond your optics. We need to make you aware of that. And they go, okay, we need to think of it that way. So it's really a sharing of knowledge from the stakeholders that what you've done yesterday is not going to get you where you need to be in the future, and improving everybody's perspective and understanding so that you are taking each of the different silos or different teams into consideration. Does that make sense?
It does. And it makes easier said than done. Sense. Well, it's easier said than done. Again, it all comes from the top down, which is kind of the theme of what we talked about in part one as well. But when you do that and you have that company culture, then it bridges those silos, right? The departments and everyone understands that they're focusing on the company success, the customer success, and then all the players in the middle are just part of that success, right? It's not the egos of sales or technical or support or whoever it is. It's one company, one customer. So in order to do that, one final question going to looking at all this is, one of the things that orgs struggle with is change, right? Change management, getting people to buy in, getting people to do that. What you're talking about is, hey, we'll just bring all these stakeholders in and we'll just, you know, form this group and then we'll, you know, do all these things. Like, how do you actually get people to change? Or let me ask it this way. How have you seen companies who have been successful in your career, internal or external, actually make changes or get people to embrace change within their organization?
Oh yeah. So you end with the simple question there, right? So there's a few thoughts on this actually. And you know, one of the things I didn't get a chance to say earlier, and I think this is really important to, by the way, mention, is from a top down, you have to encourage people within each of the path, the, you know, leadership, the directors, down to, you know, the individual contributors. You have to really foster within your culture that it's okay to question something. It's okay to voice your opinion. This is something that is very hard for a lot of companies to grapple with. But if I am creating a process or I'm creating a new structure or a new system, and I may think it's effective, I may think it's efficient, I think this is going to work. But if the end users, the consumers of that, are having problems and they're finding it difficult, a couple of things are going to happen. One, they're going to try to circumvent those processes. All right. Number two, you're going to have low morale. You're going to have a low adoption rate. And maybe it's not the best thing out there. So you want to make sure that you encourage everybody to be able to not be afraid to speak up without reprimand in the back end. And maybe I've created something that is better than the old system. But maybe someone who's more seen, someone who's been around, they have some recommendations to tweak and enhance. So you want to get that collaboration, you want to get that buy-in, and you want people to know, hey, we're putting this new thing out there, but if you have a suggestion to improve it, go ahead. The first time I ever saw this was years and years ago. I used to work for a bank called MBNA America, who had since been acquired many times, now part of Bank of America. And they had a program called Masterpiece. And it was basically, if you can come up with any idea to improve something within the bank in different, you know, areas and submit it, and if it was implemented, you actually got a small bonus. Could be on a few $100, whatever it is, depending on how big that bonus is. And you wouldn't believe some of the things that came out of that would actually, nobody would think about that, would save the company hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, or improve a process, improve something for the customers. Those iterative updates are important. So that's one thing. If I know a new process is coming up, but I know that I have the power as an individual consumer, a contributor who's consuming that, I have the power to suggest improvements, suggest updates. I now have a stake in that. And that's going to improve buying of it from the end level. All right. So that's number one. Number two, when you create a process, when you create a new solution or you roll something out, like I said, get the buying from the teams that are actually going to be utilizing it. So if it's something that you're coming out that IT is rolling out, and that the end consumers are, let's say, business line of business teams, you want those leaders involved because they're going to know their internal pros and cons. They're going to know the internal systems far better than you and IT can. And they're going to be able to make some iterative suggestions so that when it's rolled out, I, on, let's say, a line of business, know, hey, my direct leadership had a buy-in to this. And if they approved it, I should feel pretty good. They know what kind of caveats and things I may encounter. So hopefully, you know, that makes a little bit of sense on how to improve the adoption rate of new solutions, processes, you know, tactics getting rolled out.
And I think fundamentally, when I hear you talking about it, when people understand the why, and then they feel empowered and they feel part of it, instead of a do as I say and just go out there and do it. But how can we all be a part of something? People want to be a part of something. People want to be led and not just managed. It's, you know, some of the stuff that you mentioned. And I think that's great. I think the more, especially the egos at the top, get out of the way and say, wait, maybe we don't have to give the illusion that we know everything. Let's get the people who are closest to it, the people who are doing the job, whatever job that is in the organization, get their feedback. What would they help? And then obviously take that and, you know, process it and see if you want to use it or not. Doesn't mean you have to do all of it, but and get people to be a part of it, and then they'll embrace change. Everyone checking this out, please, hopefully you took some notes from this. Hopefully you will listen to part one or watch part one on the YouTube channel as well. And if any of this is resonating, any of it sounds intriguing, please make sure to check out Adam's LinkedIn, Adam Geffner on LinkedIn. Connect with him, chat with him on there. If you want to chat more, he's a great guy, very open to sharing and connecting. And then also Emphasis, the company he works for, make sure to check that out. The show notes will be in there, but it's MPHASIS.com. Adam, once again, thanks for coming on here and dropping a lot of great gems. I took a ton of notes. Really cool stuff that hopefully will help individual contributors, but also organizations. So thanks for the time and the energy on the show today.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And one last comment for viewers that are wondering who, if you're not familiar with who Emphasis is, we are an applied technology company. So Emphasis, I like to look at it as we're kind of an information technology solutions provider, and we specialize in cloud and cognitive services.
Perfect. All right. Thank you again for being here, for everyone watching, tuning in. Like I said, check out part one, check out the links in the show notes, all the stuff that we talked about, all of that. Be a part of this conversation. Make sure to share this, get more of this stuff out there to help sales organizations. And until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.